Welcome to Holden Village. Tonight in the Fireside Room, Bill Malcolmson will be teaching a session on creative aging, memory. So let's listen in on Bill.
We have had a request to spend a few minutes at the beginning on something that grew out of last night's discussion. And we had a request to say a little bit about choosing a nursing home. Now, not all of you are probably going into one tomorrow, but nonetheless, I know it is a concern for folks, and there are some principles involved which might be of interest in terms of retirement homes as well as nursing homes. And fortunately, I have a resource here in the person of my spouse, who is a social worker and has worked since 1970 with senior adults in senior centers and a retirement home and nursing home. And so if anybody knows how to deal with that topic, it's she. So this is Lori Malcolmson, and Lori has a few words.
Very brief.
Very brief, yeah. Lori's not a windy person.
No. After that introduction, I think I'll forget the whole thing.
Thanks, dear.
Well, in terms of nursing homes, at least from my experience, there's three categories. You may think of a few more. But first, there's the large for-profit corporations, which have nursing homes across the country or maybe in a few states or something. Another kind is the small private, for-profit, again, nursing homes, which are individually owned. I worked at one of those, which was, I mean, it was bitty. 47 beds, I mean, bitty. But it was privately owned by a couple. And they had various careers. This was sort of a pre-retirement career. And they were there every day, all day, you know, I mean, too long, but I would say that it was a well-run private facility because they were on the ball and that was their life. But not all of them are, so there's a lot of variations. Third category is your denominational run nursing homes, which I would put up on top of my list. I would think that they're nonprofit. They're much more, I think, my experience has been they're more apt to treat people as individuals rather than bed number four. You know? Also provide more services and more extensive programming. That's a generalization, but I think it's true. One of the things that you need to, I would say, before you even visit a nursing home, if possible, is phone, write, ask for information. Get all the information. They all have introductory packets of some sort or other. Get that packet, read it carefully, because you need to be informed when you go to visit the nursing home. So know what their general policies are. Then you can bring back some specific questions you want to ask them. And of course, finances is a big thing, and as you all know, the privately run nursing homes cost a fortune. But be sure that the financial end of it is explained to your satisfaction. Don't just sort of say, yeah. Be sure you know what they're talking about. You need to know what is covered in a monthly fee, what is not covered. For instance, if the resident needs to go to a doctor's appointment, can they get transportation from the home? Or and does it cost, et cetera. That's a minor thing, but in terms of services, physical therapy, all these things, what is the cost and how available is it? Because some nursing homes will have more of these kinds of services readily available than others. I would say if you're interested, in addition to an appointment with the staff or whoever does that sort of thing, eat a meal there. Go to an activity. Get a feeling for this place that is not something that the staff can tell you about, but experience it yourself. There are more and more, and I'm not sure, I can't give you the figures exactly, but your nursing home population is becoming more frail, more needy. I know this personally from when I quit my nursing home job in 92. We had a number of people in this 47-bed place who were with it intellectually. And that was exciting to have that group. And I returned to the same nursing home this year, and it's gone down. They're a much frailer population, and I think that's due to state regulations and so forth. Let's see, what else? They're shifting, tending to shift people more and more. Say you can do a board and care facility rather than a nursing home. You're too able to go to a nursing home. In terms of continuing care retirement homes, which are, I would essentially say the same thing, that I would look at your denominational or other denomination, look at your nonprofit denominational retirement homes first. I just really feel they do the best job. The continuing care home is where you generally come in where you're still in an independent apartment. You may eat a meal or so in their dining room, but you have your own kitchen facility, bathroom, living room, bedroom. That's an independent apartment. But then as you become more frail, you can move to assisted living, which is the next one down. Generally in assisted living, you would get all your meals in the dining room. You would still have a private room plus bathroom, but your meals would be prepared for you. So it's not as independent, but it's still, you still retain some independence, and then nursing care would be the last one. And again, I'd say be sure you understand the financing. For instance, what happens if your funds run out? Will you be transferred to Medicaid so that your bills will be covered? I think that's becoming more common now. A few years ago, there used to be nursing homes where you'd have to move to another facility if you got down where your funds could no longer cover the bill and you had to care on Medicaid. But I think that's less and less true. I think most of your nursing homes are tending now to take the Medicaid much more so than they used to. I guess that's about all I have to say.
Okay, any questions, John?
I would say an important aspect then of that is availability. For instance, we moved into Riverview, which is a Lutheran retirement home in Spokane. We're in our own condo, but the thing is that their retirement place, like a little small room where they eat three meals a day, there's a 3 or 4 year waiting list. So you can't get in there until you wait 3 or 4 years unless you're a resident, which we are a resident
right
now.
Yeah.
So you want to look ahead if you have any qualms that way.
Yeah, and once you're a resident,
yeah,
then the other levels of care are taken right care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Spokane's got, I'll bet, 7 or 8 denominational retirement homes.
Plus another 15 probably.
Oh, yeah.
For profit.
Yeah.
For a city the size, it has more option that I've never heard of.
Any other questions? Okay, go, Wynn.
One book I just recently read suggested, and this is a couple of years ago, that all rest homes are rip-offs. The costs are too high. The way to get under that is go to them not as a patient, but as an investor the first time. So you'd like to buy in. And if they brag about how much money they make and how much you will make, that's a clue.
Probably not too bad. The profit ones don't make too much money.
There's another aspect to this, though. The state of Washington, up to 2 years ago, didn't tax that because of nonprofit organizations, but they're supposed to tax it. Last year, we don't have our tax statement yet, and we're.
Maybe I can answer that. I was on the state committee 2 years ago, appointed to serve up from AARP. And we were going along to investigate some of the nursing homes. They were, you have to provide a certain percent of low-income people, which would include Medicaid, before you got tax exemption. And they had such a mixed-up law that some of the homes were, what they were doing is they gave you a double exemption for low-income rather than one-on-one, which we thought was illegal and it was immoral also. So we changed the law and we finally got it passed. So there's consistency in the nonprofit status. So you'd probably be able to tax it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, resource person.
She did a fine job.
Yeah, right. If you have some specific questions or you want to ask her or comments you'll make, we're here till Saturday. So now on to memory. Forward to memory. I've put a couple of categories here under memory. First one I'm going to deal with first. Memory is a way of interweaving our past and our present. In the quotations that I handed out, which I only have two extras left at this point, if you didn't bring yours, but anyway, there they are, and you're welcome to pass them around. I can't get that far from here. On the second page, the second quotation I want to use first, we do not merely have memories, we are memories. Western culture tends to view time as more destructive than creative, but memory is a way of describing the cumulative nature of time, the presence of the past within us. Time not only unravels, it also knits up. There's a lot in the Bible about re-experiencing the past. For example, in Deuteronomy, the material that's used there, which is actually used in the Passover service, about identifying with Abraham and with the folks who came way back then and reliving that time. So in the Passover ritual, the idea of reliving the Passover, and if you've ever been in the Seder service, you know that they really do relive it. They relive it in detail. And it's our Lord's Supper, of course, is based on that. And I remember growing up, I would always hear the phrase, I'm American Baptist, I would always hear the phrase in our Lord's Supper service, do this in remembrance of me. Jesus saying that. And I had thought of it for all those many years as a remembering something that happened in the past. Then when I studied the biblical material, particularly in seminary, I realized that that really wasn't what that meant. What that really meant, and should say, is relive that experience. Do this in remembering me, because that's growing out of the Passover, that's what it meant. It meant that you relive, that the past of 2,000 years in this case comes into the present and you relive that experience as if we were the disciples. And so the Bible tends to think that way. Now, American culture tends to be so different because I think in American culture we tend to sort of act as if everything started last week. Unless you take Jack's course, then you know it started last century. But in European cultures, as many of you are aware, you often have a sense of living both in the past and in the present. I'm always struck with that when we visit overseas, that people will be talking about things that happened in 1600s as if it were last night. And that, you notice that? And that the past and the present always seem so interwoven. It's particularly true in places like Scotland, England, for example, where you get the feeling that, you know, the wars between people, which you don't realize took place in the 12th century, are in fact taking place right now. They're still fighting them and refighting. But anyway, memory is a way of interweaving our past and our present. Another quotation there, the third one down from the top, says, Alfred North Whitehead tells us, memory is really another word for presence. Events that are finished live on in the very constitution of our being. We are all that we have experienced, even though we may not be able to remember or be conscious of all that has affected us. Now, I have this little theory. I have little theories on a lot of things. I can't prove any of them, nor can you, so why not hang on to them? I tend to believe that nothing really ever gets lost. That everything feeds our memory, one way or another. I also believe that our memories are very, very active. And that as a matter of fact, almost every moment of every day, we are really reliving as well as living. That is, we are not only living in the present, we are reliving a lot of the past at the same time. We're not always conscious of it. But an awful lot of what we're doing is living the past and the present at the same time. And if you stop and think about it, you realize that, sure, that's true. That's sort of in a kind of a substrata of your mind there. Stuff that's happened to you in the past is always impinging on what we're doing and thinking right now. So we're never really fully in the present. We're always in the present and the past at the same time. Now, that's shown by what triggers memories. Let's take, for example, a simple thing like smells. Now, if I walk into a barn, for example, and there's hay in there, all of a sudden I'm in southern Indiana in 1938 or 9 in my grandfather's farm. I mean, I'm transported just like that. Or if there are leaves burning in the fall. You know, they don't supposed to burn them anymore, but if by chance you get someplace where they're living more civilized and you realize that leaves are burning in the fall, immediately I'm back in upstate New York in 1940. Or if there's jasmine, I can remember where did I first smell jasmine? What are some of the smells that trigger so that you're all of a sudden back someplace else? Come on. I know you have. What? Barnyard smell. Any barnyard smell, right? Okay.
Fresh strawberries.
Ah, where are you when you smell fresh?
Oh, way back in the 20s. My folks' place.
Okay.
Lilacs. We had lilac bushes that went all around the front of our house and the back in Vermont.
Oh boy.
It was just beautiful. The smell was so nice.
Oh yeah.
Come in our bedroom windows.
Oh.
And that was back in the 30s.
But it could be right now when you smell lilacs. Anybody else?
Pine needles on the stove.
Pine needles on the
stove? They used to put pine needles on a wood stove, you
know? Oh yeah. Yeah.
Smelled the whole house. Takes me back to before I was 10.
All right.
Cigar smoke.
Fresh Christmas tree.
Fresh Christmas tree. Oh, yeah. Cigar smoke.
Oh.
Mr. Galusha lived down the street, Fulton, New York. Every time he went into his house, smell of cigar. I love Mr. Galusha. It was a big shock to me when I first tried my first cigar, and I realized he didn't smell like that. Either he spent more for cigars, Or secondhand cigar smoke smells better than smoking it yourself.
Well, it reminds me of Christmas. Because when I was a small child, every Christmas my dad smoked cigars, and that was the only time of year.
The only time of year?
Yeah. And it always reminded me of Christmas. Oh,
that's marvelous.
Yeah. My mother tells of her father, a pastor, would do no smoking except Saturday night when all his work was ready for the next day. So this to her was a paschal thing. Worship experience.
It's marvelous. Okay, seeing a photograph. Yeah, this is where you see a photograph, all of a sudden, flood of memories come in. Particularly, it's a photograph of, say, a grandmother, or of what experience have you had with that kid? Maybe recently, have you seen which all of a sudden everything flowed back? Anybody on that? Yeah?
I've decorated my whole house with photographs of places I've visited.
Oh.
The scenery.
Yeah.
And of course, each one takes me to a certain place. And certain memory.
Yeah. That's a wonderful thing to do that, I think. I find myself going back through, or bring out the slides and putting them up there and seeing the kids when they were, you know, a lot younger. They don't always appreciate it as much. But okay, food. Ah, what food? Lemon sherbet.
Thanksgiving.
For me. Thanksgiving, okay.
Bread baking.
Pardon me?
Bread baking.
Bread baking. What bread baking really does, really brings back memories for you?
Every Friday, my mother baked 7 big loaves of bread.
Okay. So your mother comes back when you smell good bread. Yeah.
Chili beans. When I was in Eastern Washington, we'd have sleigh rides. A farmer would bring his sleigh in, and we'd go out to his place, and they'd have hot chili and hot chocolate. Ooh, you know, that's... almost married the guy that died.
Where were your priorities?
Well, food first, you know.
Yeah, food first. That's right. Anybody else on foods? No? How about ginger cookies?
Barbecue.
Yeah. How about, Laurie, how about salmon?
Baked in the sand.
At Bainbridge, on Bainbridge Island.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Lutefisk, the smell of Lutefisk.
Lutefisk, yeah. That would certainly bring back something, yeah. Right.
How about sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut. Okay, books. See a book, particularly going to a used bookstore, and you see a book. Like Lloyd Douglas's The Robe, for example, it's my generation. Look at this. Oh, yeah, I remember when I first read that. Or do books do it for you? Bring, like what, for example?
Well, new books do. Because when I went to school in the Depression, finally I got to one school that had brand new books.
Oh,
and we got to open them up, and you know, they told us to talk away, and they smelled so good.
Anybody else have that experience?
Yep.
Okay. Is there a particular book that if you saw it, you'd all of a sudden all the memories would come back? Think of it.
Old-fashioned school books like we had years ago.
There you go. Sure.
We had a little schoolhouse. We had 15 kids, and I can still see Jack and Jill do this. And all this stuff brings me right back to when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Mother Goose rhymes, particular books I can remember, which won't transport me anymore.
Dick and Jane Reader.
Pardon me?
Dick and Jane Reader.
Dick and Jane. Dick and Jane really existed, didn't they? Yeah.
See, old letters or diaries.
See Dick run. Old letters or diaries, oh boy. Mm-hmm. Do you keep old letters? No.
Some, sure.
Some.
I found it expedient to make an annual report on about 3 pages of the events by month and date of all the years.
My goodness.
I want to remember when something was, I can go back and find it.
You know, that is too organized, you know.
Well, I want to check how often I've been here, and I'd like to do that.
You know, I was with my mother, who I mentioned before, who's 91. I was with my mother a number of months ago, And we were looking at, my dad was the kind of person who kept meticulous account of everything he spent. In fact, he was Scottish, may have had something to do with that. But nonetheless, he kept meticulous account of everything he spent. And this triggered it because I hadn't thought about this before, what it meant, what she was doing. So you helped me, Erwin. Anyway, and so she said to me, she said, you know, I really, and she had book after book of this stuff. She said, you know, now that Dad's gone, I really ought to get rid of these. And I said, being the, you know, thoughtful son, I said, yes, Mother, I really think you probably ought to. I mean, you don't want that stuff just piled up. And she said, well, I'm going to do that. And I just realized why it was difficult for her to do that. She's doing it now, but it's a diary. And it's, you know, and she, I know that when she tears up those pages and decides she's going to do it slowly, and she's going to look at a lot of them before she actually does it. I realize that's why. That was an interesting insight into what that meant. Okay, let's take a memory that you often recall, that keeps recurring. And I'll give you an example so you know what I mean. There's a memory that I have that keeps recurring to me over and over again. Not every day, but often. And it's like so many memories that recur, it's kind of a dumb thing. You know, it's an inconsequential thing, or at least it would appear to be to someone from the outside. What I remember is, I was a kid, I was maybe 8 or 9, I was on my grandfather's farm in southern Indiana. I was there by my grandfather was, of course, quite a bit older than I, and my great aunt, they lived together, she was also quite a bit older than I. And I would spend time just there by myself with them. And so I remember I would go out about, quite a ways from the house, and I'd pick up this little stick, and Granddad somehow had small pebbles all over the driveway, all over the ground, all over the road that came up to the house, and I would, you know, and I would hit these pebbles, and I'd hit them as far as I could. And I often thought, now why is it, when I'm just not doing anything, I'll remember that dumb little thing about hitting those pebbles? Well, I analyzed it, I realized that really was very significant. A couple reasons. One, I was not an athletically inclined child at all. In fact, I was lousy in athletics. So it, to me, was important to do that because it showed I could do it. And nobody was around to judge me as to whether I hit them well or not. And so I would do that. I would hit those things, and nobody was there to say, gee, that was a lousy hit, Bill, or if you missed it, you know, make any difference, because I was the only one there. And I would do it for an hour. You'd just hit those pebbles. It was kind of a dumb, but I remember that, and it recurs over and over again. I realized that was really an important memory for me, part of self-esteem, really. Someone else,
what I expected you to say, and those pebbles went into the grass, and my mother bawled me out.
No, because I hit them far enough, they go over where the cows were usually, and it's kind of tall grass, and nobody'd ever find those pebbles. Someone else, what's a recurring memory that you have? It keeps coming back, something, you know, it doesn't have to be incredibly significant, but I'm sure you have them. I'm not that weird.
Well, I have at least 4 near-death experiences. Some as a child.
Uh-huh.
I don't necessarily relive them, but I guess I do in a way.
They do come back, though. Yeah, yeah. Well, you can see why that would be important.
Yeah. I get lost in dreams. You know, I'm in a big city and I can't find my way around.
Yeah.
So maybe there was something in my childhood that.
Yeah, in my dreams I get lost in car lots. I park the car somewhere and I'm not sure I can find it. You ever have that recurring?
Sure. In my dreams.
That's not a dream.
I mentioned the other night in the other class that we did it just 2 weeks ago. Got lost in the Portland Mall. Couldn't
yeah.
find our car.
Yeah.
Went up certain elevators and whatnot, you know, ramps.
Yeah.
Finally, we had to walk down below to the entrance from the main street and retrace our route as we drove. And sure enough, there was a car.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, it gets a little frightening sometimes, doesn't it?
We took a careful note where we parked it before we went to the store.
Oh, yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah. Well, malls are not made for human beings. Particularly not for memories. Anybody else? A recurring memory you have that it'd just be interesting to know what is it that keeps coming back to you? So surely you have it.
Well, I have. It's almost not a nightmare. I quit smoking over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And for 10 years, I'd dream that I was smoking in. I'd wake up just mad at myself. Starting into smoking in my dreams.
Isn't that interesting?
That kept coming back for 10 years.
Huh. My earliest memory, our folks are in a church in Wisconsin. They didn't get much sex like geese. And we had to pass two geese that were penned right at the back door. And I was afraid they were going to get out at me. And as I had to go outside, that memory still comes back. The scare of those geese. It must have been three, maybe.
Yeah. My great aunt was so strong on memories. She would, as I was growing up, she would tell me everything I think that occurred to her at any time in her life. And she never had an unexpressed thought, you know. And so Annie would, so I was very conscious of needing to remember things. So when I was 5 years old, a couple of kids and I were at the farm across from my granddad's farm. We were sitting in the meadow. We were all sitting around. This is really strange. We were sitting around, and I remember I said to them, this is at five, I said to them, I'm going to remember that when I was 5 years old, I was sitting in the meadow on Mauser's farm in Indiana. What had never occurred to me is that that was really very insignificant to be sitting in a meadow at a farm. But it was significant because I wanted to have a memory too, because my great aunt remembered everything, and I thought, I want to remember things too. So I decided I was going to remember that, and I've never forgotten it. That was 57 years ago, and I still remember sitting in that silly meadow with those two kids. Okay. Interweaving our past and present. As I say, I think we live in the past and present all the time, never fully in the present. And never fully in the past, for that matter. But that all these experiences have affected us, interweave with our lives. To say of someone, well, they're always living in the past. Well, I don't know. I think you can live creatively in the past. That is, I think you can use your past creatively to enhance your present. I really believe that very strongly. And I think the older I get, the more I consciously do that, is to try to interweave the past to the present in creative ways so that it gives a dimension to the present. Second area I want to deal with is memory is a way of changing our perception of the past and conditioning our future. Memory is a way of changing our perception of the past and conditioning our future. Think, for example, and you don't have to, you don't need to express this to the rest of us, because it could be very private. Think of an unpleasant memory, an unpleasant experience. Perhaps when you when you were hurt by someone, or you were responsible for hurting someone, or it was a big mistake that you made, or a defeat, a rejection, or an experience of physical or emotional, psychological abuse. Unpleasant memory that you can go back to. Now, lots of times when we have unpleasant memories, particularly if they're very traumatic memories, we dwell on them, and we, in a sense, raise them to a status which may be more than they deserve. As you think of that particular memory, think of it, particularly if it's very negative, think of it in the perspective of your whole life. how important is that event in the perspective of, you know, these 60, 70, 75, whatever, 80 years that you've lived? Just for a moment, just let's just take spend a little time in silence and just think of that. Think of the memory. Think of the situation that is, you know, very negative. And now put it in the perspective of your whole life. Now let's do another thing connected with that. If you can, think of a situation in your past which is an important thing for you. Perhaps someone involving another person. Someone who was mean to you, or someone whom you hurt, or they hurt you. And let's close our eyes for a few moments, not go to sleep hopefully, but close our eyes for a few moments, and in our imagination, talk to that person. They could be dead now, but talk to that person just a little bit. Maybe from the perspective you have now at your age today, talk to that person a little bit. In silence, in imagination, just for a moment. The fourth quotation down on this sheet is as follows. The process of reviewing our lives can result in increased candor, serenity, and wisdom. It can lead to the expiation of guilt, the reconciliation of relationships, and the resolution of inner conflicts. But recalling unresolved conflicts or past inadequacies can also lead to depression, anxiety, and a sense that our lives have been a waste. There's a big emphasis now, as you know, on the recovering of memories. There's a big emphasis, I think too much emphasis, on the recovering of unpleasant memories. Personally, that's my bias. Particularly there, because memory's tricky. One of the reasons it's tricky is you can remember things that didn't happen. But, or you can remember things that were in dreams instead of in reality. I mean, that's happened more than once to me and probably to all of us. But I do think it's sometimes very helpful to remember persons, particularly for whom, about whom we felt negatively, and to sort of in imagination talk with them. And deal with that rather than just let it go. The healing of memories, this is called. And I think sometimes that can be helpful. Not for everybody, but for some people that can be very helpful. Now, I want us to do something which I think will illustrate another theory I have. I'm going to stand up for this one and use this. Can you all see this?
No.
You can't?
Oh, that's the other member of your family who sat down.
Not after you erased it.
No, I didn't expect you to see it after I erased it.
We're supposed to recall what you wrote.
Right. This is a technique that I use. I taught preaching for many, many years in seminaries. And this is a technique I used to use with students who were learning how to preach. Because I knew that many of them, because of their training in college, would, when they were preparing a sermon, they would go to any book they could find, go to commentaries, go to all this, and do a research paper. And so I'd say, let's try something a little different. I said, I'll bet, well, say bet necessarily, but I think that in your memory, in your storehouse of ideas and thoughts, you probably have more than you realize. That you've thought about whatever your topic is going to be more than you realize you've thought about it. And that it would be helpful to bring some of those things to the surface as a part of your preparation for saying something about it. So I'm going to test this out and see if it works here. we're going to take a topic. And that topic is going to be you read that, Lauren?
No.
Wonder.
Wonder.
W-O-N-D-E-R. Wonder. Okay? All right. When I say the word wonder, what other words or phrases occur to you? Just toss them out.
Bread. Wonder bread.
Bread. Okay.
How about awe?
Awe.
Amazement.
Amazement.
Good question.
Pardon me?
Wonderful.
I didn't hear the one before wonderful.
Question.
Question. Thank you.
Curiosity.
Any others?
The wonders of nature.
Okay. Now, I have to look here. What my memory is not perfect. All right. When I say wonder, places you have been. What places come to mind when I say wonder?
Hold it.
Hold it. Okay.
Grand Canyon.
Crater Lake.
Air's rock.
Something too fast. okay. Great Lake.
Great Wall of China.
Christmas morning.
Christmas morning. Oh, good. Okay.
Song. There's a song for that too.
A song called
Wonder.
Wonder?
I wonder as I wander.
That's not bad either. I wonder as I wander. Okay. People. What people come to mind when you hear the word wonder?
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman. You have an interesting life.
I had a sheltered life, you know.
Yeah, sheltered life, yeah. Not sheltered enough. Okay. What people come to mind?
Schweitzer.
Schweitzer? Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Can I put in a political one?
Yeah.
FDR, he was my hero.
FDR, okay.
Abraham Lincoln.
All right.
How about Carol Hinderly, the founder here, more or less, of Holden?
I'll put founder Holden, okay. Come on, there we go. Writing too fast. Anyone else? Someone that you know personally, you know, we don't have to know them to put them up here.
My grandfather.
Grandfather, okay. I would do that too.
Mother-in-law.
Good for you.
You didn't say it was terrible.
Little children.
Little children, yeah.
Mother Teresa.
Okay.
JFK.
Uh-huh.
Einstein.
There you go.
Seven wonders of the world.
All seven. Okay.
People.
Okay, now, how about, let's see here. Describe an experience of wonder that you have had. This word would be particularly useful to describe that.
Birth.
Pardon me?
Birth.
Birth of?
Of any individual. A birth to me is the most marvelous wonder of all, that that child could grow, you know, from a tiny embryo, come out so well formed.
I know. And when our first child was born, goodness. I looked at her and I said, she looks like my father. I'm just glad she was alive.
Standing at the ocean side.
A particular ocean? Mm-hmm. Which one?
Pacific. At Capiz.
At Copelos?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like Claylock.
At Claylock. Okay.
Which is very close, almost the same, but it's my retreat.
Okay.
Paradise Valley, Mount Rainier.
When the flowers are blooming.
Yes, when the flowers are blooming.
Paradise Valley in spring.
Beautiful.
How about devastation in St. Albans?
Okay. What's wonder on that?
Wonder when baseball games started.
Don't stay up nights.
I understand.
Expecting it. I love it.
There's more happy women since the stranger.
I'll put baseball in question mark.
Yeah.
How about the kingdom?
Yeah, talk about a wonder, yeah. what are we going to have another kingdom?
What are they going to do with it?
What are they going to do with it? Right. Okay.
Wonder of romance, especially a happy marriage.
All right.
And beauty, art, music.
How about a particular musical piece?
The Messiah.
Piece?
Beethoven's ninth.
Which one is the ninth? That's not da-da-da-da, that's the fifth, isn't it?
That's the joyful. This has the big thing, he and him at the end.
Pardon me?
Sorry.
Any of Gershwin's music.
See what our musical tastes are here.
How about anything by Bach?
Anything by Bach.
Okay. How about Finlandia?
How about Finlandia?
Yeah.
How about a painting?
Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa?
When you look at her, her eyes follow you no matter where you go.
Right. The Night Watch. That's Rembrandt.
Yeah. In Amsterdam.
The Sunflowers by Van Gogh.
Van Gogh's Sunflowers, yeah. Right.
St. Paul's Cathedral in London.
All right.
Fritz Hall's The Man in the Golden Helmet.
Mm-hmm.
The Sistine Chapel.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
I'd love to go there.
I'm going to have to bring another board into the other room.
Okay. Just one word can trigger so many things. What if you were to think, now those of you who have memorized all the Bible, what would you think of it? Or memorize one verse. Is there a particular verse that says wonder to you?
For God so loved the world.
Oh, okay. What else?
Romans 8:28,
which is?
You know that in all time.
I know it, but for I'm persuaded that neither death nor life, that's that one.
Romans 8:28.
Pardon me?
Psalm 103:23 or 121.
How do they start?
Well, we all know 23. But
right.
The part in 103 I especially like is, as a father could be with his children, and their sins are
As far as the east is from the west.
East is from the west.
So far,
that state of forgiveness is still.
The other morning here at Holden, I had 121. I lifted up my eyes into the hills.
Yes. You can't lift them down here. You have to go out there, right?
Well, that the Air Force Academy.
Think of all the stuff we have in our memories, all the stuff that we don't often bring up to the surface, that is there, and that can enrich, I believe, can enrich our lives immeasurably. And I think sometimes it would be helpful to us to do this in a conscious way, and to relive a lot of the experiences that we have had. And I say it's a way of changing our perception of the past, but it's also, I think, a way of conditioning our future. And I think one of the advantages we have as we get older is we have more and more and more memories. And that we can draw on a lot more than we could when we were younger.
My mother-in-law was in the rest home. She was 86 years old.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes she couldn't remember, so I went to see her. I went up one night to visit her, and she's sitting in a chair, and she's got a purse and things, and her hands are crossed. And I says, "Where are you going, Ma? Where's your coat on?" Oh, she says, "Gertie and I are going to Spokane tonight on the train." And she was, that's when she was 17 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But you couldn't remember us.
No, right. Yeah, yeah.
For recall, what beats pictures or slides?
Yeah, right.
You think of travel sites.
Right, right. My feeling is that we tend to play down. I may be wrong, but my feeling is that we tend to play down the richness of our memories. We tend to say, "Oh, well, that isn't very important." Or, "People will not be interested in what I remember." Test that out with your grandchildren as to how disinterested they are in what you remember. They're often very, very interested, if you have grandchildren. They're often very, very interested in what you remember. Because these are things that are totally foreign to them, right? And they want to know, what was it like? They want, of course, one reason they want to know, and maybe not realize this, they want to know what it was like was because they want some perspective on themselves. And memory gives us that. It gives us this perspective on who we are. I remember one time I was with a church history professor, a fellow who was my history professor in seminary. And this was some years later, and I was a teacher then, and we were kind of peer professionals at that point. And we were talking about something was happening at that time in the world. And as a historian, he said, "Well, you know, these things come in, these things come in waves." He said that what we're talking about here is something I've seen like that before, and he'd tell me the historical era when it occurred. And I thought, what it must be like to be a professional historian, and when things happen, to be able to put them in the perspective of, you know, well, that isn't the only time in the world when something like this has happened before. And that gives us a perspective on what's going on and helps us, I think, perhaps in many ways, to be a little less anxious about some things that because they don't strike us just as totally new. Okay, any other reactions you have to this matter of interweaving past and present and using memory to condition the future? Yes?
Well, I think it's something that's very Christian because it evokes thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
And then confidence for the future as well.
Right.
My Lord has brought me this far.
Right. Right. This far by faith. Yes. Okay. That's good. Anybody else? Insight on these particular themes. Okay.
Did it say that elderly people have a deeper sense of wonder than young people? Do you think that's true? Better appreciation?
I think things change at a particular time in life. That's my honest feeling about it. I think that people who are pretty young, have a certain kind of sense of wonder, that as seeing the world for the first time. When our youngest son was quite a bit younger than he is now, he's 25 now, but when he was, let's say, 10, he and I used to take days off together, my day off, not his, and go off and explore and so forth. And I remember the joy I had in going with him because everything he saw was he'd never seen before. And that's a certain kind of wonder, you know, it's seeing it for the first time. But then when he got a little older, he lost a lot of that. I mean, he still has some of it, but you know, there's a lot of that kind of gets lost. But that is a sense of wonder, but it isn't like ours, is it? Because ours is more of a putting stuff in perspective wonder, right? When does it pick up again? When do you think that appreciation wonder picks up again?
When you retire.
Why do you think so?
You have the time.
Okay.
You don't have the pressures of having to work. At least I find out I probably learn more after. Before.
That's when the sense of wonder picks up again. Huh? Do you think, is that true? Mm-hmm. Do you think?
Yeah. You have time to reminisce.
Okay. I like us now, if we listen, it's already just about 7:15. I'd like for us to spend a few moments not total silence, because I want to say something. A few moments in sort of a guided prayer. Let's close our eyes. Spirit of God, so much has happened to each of us over these many years. Some of what has happened we would like desperately to forget. But for some reason it is difficult to do so. And we need help in transforming these bad memories into something that is good and helpful. Many of the memories we have are good, and we would like to keep the ability to be able to recall those things which enrich our lives. We don't want to lose that. Spirit of God, we are grateful that you have been with us throughout all of our past. That you are here with us now. And that we know because you have told us that you will be with us forever. Thank you for the richness of the lives we have lived, we now live, and will continue to live. And for the glorious opportunity to be alive. In the name of Jesus, amen.